Welcome to Truth Be Told. This is Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. We have another guest from Contact in the Desert, May 31st through June 3rd. We have Elizabeth Wilcox, who is a mystic trailblazer and creator of the Priestess Path Lineages of Light, initiating women into the sacred and mystic arts. For most of her adult life, she has trained with masters and grandmasters in shamanism, martial arts, qigong, and the mystic arts. She earned 5 black belts in Kung Fu and is the first female master in her martial arts organization, where she owned and operated 5 martial arts schools and has trained thousands of students. She is also initiated priestess and combines her years of experience into her Priestess Path initiatives. So please welcome, the truth be told, the one and only Elizabeth Wilcox.
That's twice, Tony. I heard That's Wilcox. Twice. So is this a separate person, or are you going to have Elizabeth Wilcox on?
Well, because we'll have this wonderful lady on now, you know, Elizabeth Wilcox. And then we'll have Elizabeth Wilcox.
Oh, so she's
later.
At 7.
Yes,
I got it. Okay, sorry about the confusion. Tony was thinking of another person. All right.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and it's always a pleasure to have some beautiful women. You know, Ron and his long hair, people convince him. Well, never mind.
Thank you.
But we're going to dive right into this, because I'm looking forward to your talk and lecture at the Contact in the Desert coming up. And June 4th, 1919 was the year that they passed the law for women to vote. And so, I mean, it just seems so unreal that it's only been 100 years that women got the right to vote. And the reason I'm saying this is because I think feminism and the feminine divine is really starting to take hold, and it's a new era for the world. And I want to talk to you about that. We'll get into the ET human females, but I want to see what your take is on how the divine and also the dimensions are opening up to female rule. And I think it's a good thing. We've had enough masculinity for the last 2,000 years. So
I wish I agreed with you, Tony.
Right.
Well, it's really a time for both the masculine and feminine to come into harmony. It's really what it is. And there's a window of opportunity right now that's just naturally occurring, where women have the ability to basically do whatever we want. I tell my students, I say, you have carte blanche to create the life that you want. What do you want to do? And whatever that is, you can go do it now. You know, and women have not had that ability for thousands of years. You know, women have gone through a very interesting history, and I do like to talk about that, the history of the feminine and the history of the goddess, because they're really one and the same. The history of the goddess is the history of the woman, because whenever the goddess is honored in a society, for instance, in the Sumerian world, Inanna was very much honored, and we see the temples to Inanna, and we see the very first priestess to Inanna and Hedwana, and this is way back in the 2300 before Christ, so this is 5,000 years ago. We have a female priestess who is ruling the temple of the moon god Nana in Ur, and she's dedicated to the goddess Inanna. And she had a similar power to the king back then. And so at that time, women would have an honored place in their society. And so that's the first time in history that we you know, the goddess in her power, and then the woman in her power, which I think one of the greatest powers is priestess, you know, a woman who is mediary between the divine and the human world, and acts as a guide and as a healer and as a mediary. And we basically kind of see it degrade from there all the way down to the place where, you know, women were just vilified.
Right.
And, you know, the entire fall of humankind was blamed on a woman, Eve. You know, the original sin was blamed on Eve.
Right.
And so everybody born, every human sinned because of what she did. And so then we see a woman being the property of her man, not being able to do anything unless her man let her do it, and that's pretty much have children and stay home and serve him. And then, you know, fast forward to, well, 100 years ago, you know, women got the right to vote, you know, right. in Western society, in the United States. So it's almost inconceivable to think that women were not allowed to vote 100 years ago. It's really interesting to see what's happening. So thanks to the women of the 70s, basically, mm-hmm. we have the feminist movement, which I see as a battering ram, basically mm-hmm. battering down a door. And you don't need the battering ram once you get through the door. So they've battened down that thing. And now we have women who are CEOs, women who own right. large companies. We have women who run countries. A woman can do really anything.
Be Captain America right now. We were just talking about
Captain
that.
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, excuse me.
Yes, right.
Suddenly she's Captain Marvel, for real. That's a new, that wouldn't yeah. have happened 20 years ago.
Exactly. So now you have, like, you know, you have Wonder Woman, you have the entertainment industry knowing right now that the hot topic is female empowerment. And so they're right. creating these hero movies based on the heroine, you know, the woman who's the hero. So this is, it's an energy coming into all of us and all of our psyches. Now, the feminine lives in men and women. So right. when we talk about the return of the divine feminine, we mean the return of the divine feminine in all of humanity, in men and women. So as you know, I have 5 black belts in the martial arts, and I spent many years inside of right. the martial art world. So I was trained by male masters and grandmasters in these ancient martial art lineages, the lineage of a warrior, a true warrior. And so really I feel that my soul is that of a sacred warrior, a warrior dedicated to the sacred. And part of that means the sacred feminine, because in these ancient lineages, what you learn when you really get to the true heart of the lineage is that the warrior only picks up arms in defense of the feminine. And the feminine is the earth and her creatures and the element and the family, the elderly, the children, basically the innocent. And so a real warrior will only take up arms in defense of the innocent if one has to. And so those are the lineages that I have been raised within. And so this resurgence, this coming back of the feminine into the world is necessary if this world is going to survive, you know, if humanity will survive.
Yeah, I have promised our audience that you're going to drop Tony in 2 seconds with a couple of moves within an inch of his life. Exactly. Well, no, at contact. This yep. is going to be like a demonstration at contact. Yeah, you're going to show how quick you could kill a man.
It will go viral.
Within an inch. Yeah, that would like to see. Yeah, 5 black belts. I mean, that's an incredible achievement on its own.
It's funny because when people hear that, they usually think fighting. The first thing that comes to mind is actual, like, fighting. Whereas for me, it was a movement art, a spiritual art. So being a woman, I'm not that interested in fighting people. I'm more interested in the art of movement and the art of using my body in this really beautiful, ancient and elegant way. So honestly, I'm not really a trained fighter. I mean, I know the places to get and really, like, you know, you'd use like a broken chopstick or something, you know. You know, I'm not going to use my muscles.
Whatever you do, as long as you drop them in like 2 seconds, that's what we're looking to see.
Embarrass me. Punish me.
Right down.
Well, I have a question, because I hear this a lot about demasculizing men and taking away their masculinity. And the people that are holding on to that era of dominance through masculinity, what do you say to those people? Because I think it's a more spiritual take on it than just taking away power. Because I think a lot of men are holding on. I mean, we can see it in politics. We can see it and religions. We can see it in pretty much just any society around the country or around the world. So what do you say to that, taking away masculinity from men?
Well, I'm not a big fan of emasculation.
Right.
For one, I was raised by masters and grandmasters, you know, and so I was actually taught how to honor an alpha male and actually how to nurture and align with the noble qualities of the masculine with the feminine qualities, the noble feminine qualities. And part of that is there's an art to assisting the empowerment of a noble alpha male. And that's what we want. We want noble alpha males. And so a woman, if a woman feels like castrating a man, she shouldn't be with that man. And you don't need to castrate the man. You can just walk away. You know, don't be with a man that you don't respect. So find a man that you respect and nourish the noble alpha qualities of him, because we truly, you know, and this is, you know, I could get in trouble for saying this, but truly men are what protect us. We have a lot of our freedoms because of the noble alpha masculine. Clearly there's ignoble masculine, there's dark masculine, and then there's noble masculine. So what I teach women to do is to be in your feminine power in a way that is supportive and inspiring to an alpha male, noble alpha male. And there's an art to that. One, you have to be very confident in who you are. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand the alchemy of the feminine. The feminine leads through inspiration and through support. As a woman, you know, I can tell my husband, I can say, this is where I stand. This is what I feel. And this is what would make me feel safe. And then he can do what he wants. And if he says, screw it, I don't care what makes you feel safe and I don't care what you feel, I might not be as attracted to him, or I might not be as inspired to him, about him. So that's really his choice, you know? And for a woman, it's a woman's responsibility to clean your perception up, to have clear and clean perception, knowing what is honorable and what is affirming. And I think that's a lifelong task. So what the next task is for the women's movement and for the feminine movement is to stand in co-creative power with the masculine, nourishing the noble masculine and knowing how to do that. And drawing a boundary with what the inferior energies are, both in men and women. It's just inferior energy, the energy that would manipulate, the energy that would rape, the energy that would steal, the less than noble energy. And that's everywhere in men and women. So part of the next women's movement is in aligning with noble power and knowing how to tend that. And what that's going to do is it will raise both men and women together, not apart.
And when you created the priestess path, lineages of light, what inspired you to bring this to light?
Well, this is really my mystery school that is the culmination of my lifetime of learning and my lifetime of experiencing and searching inside of the mystic lineages. So early on, I knew that I was not cut out for normal life, if you will. I couldn't have a normal job. I couldn't sit at a desk. I couldn't be under fluorescent lights. And so by the time I was 18 years old, I knew that I could not be a part of conventional reality because it made me sick. Literally, I was hospitalized for an eating disorder that I had had for 5 years. And part of the gestalt of that eating disorder was my soul was sick, of being in a world that didn't nourish the spiritual side of ourselves. And I was having experiences with the spirit world. I was having visitations. I was incredibly sensitive. I could talk to animals. I didn't want to talk to people because they confused me. And so when I became my own young adult, I made the decision not to be a part of conventional reality. And I made the decision to find the mystic traditions. And I began with shamanism because that's what was led into my life. That's what came into my life. And through shamanism, I had a miraculous healing of this eating disorder that I had had. And then I dedicated myself to the healing path. So what flowered out of that were some other mystic lineages, and that included the martial art lineage, and that included the priestess lineage, which is really the empowered feminine, you know, spiritual lineage, a woman, you know, holding this position as ritualist, as healer, as, you know, guide, coming from the divine, you know, basically channeling the divine energy. So that's what did it for me, really, you know, I mean, that's what I was interested in. And so that's what I dedicated my life to. And after 30 years of that, there really comes a time in somebody's life when what you've dedicated your life to for so long, like getting information and getting tools from that, you really have to give it back, because what's the next step for you after you have learned so much? You know, I spent years and years in the martial arts. I spent years and years in the shamanic lineage. I spent years in the priestess lineage. The culmination of that is for me to give back. And so at a certain time in our life, we know, and I was visited by the golden goddess, and she asked me to help to anchor in the sacred feminine here on earth. And the result of that is me creating the priestess path.
Hold on. You're saying that you had an actual visitation?
Numerous visitations.
Well, when that first happened, what do you think it was? Like a spiritual thing? Or what do you attribute it to?
Definitely a spiritual thing. It was a vision.
A vision. Okay.
I had a visitation vision from the golden goddess, who is either the goddess, manifestation of the goddess. The goddess has many forms, but it's the divine feminine energy. And it was after I had gone through a number of very important initiations that I had chosen to go through. And then she welcomed me into her fold, and it was part of a spiritual community on the other side. And then she revealed to me that the earth was sick for lack of the nourishing feminine dew of compassion, nurturance, understanding, love, and care. And that's why the world is sick. So why are we raping and polluting our world? It's because we have disrespected the feminine, we don't value it, and we're not bringing the feminine qualities. We, as in me and you and you and you and you and you and you and humanity as a whole, if we were to embody the feminine qualities of respect, respecting this earth, respecting the animals, respecting the innocence, then we would just simply appreciate it for what it is. And we would learn to live in harmony with it, and not to defile it, and not to use it and pollute it and rape it. So this is the feminine, you know? So when we embody those feminine values, we respect it. And that's how we would and will live in harmony with this earth. And this is also how we will graduate into a galactic community. Hmm. We will not be allowed into a galactic community unless we can respect the feminine. Hmm.
Now, how did you, when you saw this vision, were you in a meditation? Was it a dream? Was it, you know, just walking through the door and you see somebody, you know, something come through the wall? How did this happen? And do you feel that you have a intuitiveness about you?
Well, like I said, I've pursued the mystic path. Mm-hmm. And so part of the mystic path is in knowing how to alter one's consciousness in order to perceive the spirit world.
Right.
So in my apprenticeship with the shamanic lineage and tradition, a part of that are the sacred medicine ceremonies where you ritualistically partake of the plant medicines in order to go into the spirit world as a shamanic journeyer in order to gain, you know, healing and right. guidance, and you create allies. This is an ancient tradition. It's been a little bit misused in that it's been exposed to the Western mind, and some people misuse it, but it's been part of the way that I have gone into the spirit world. I've done it 70 times.
Wow. Yeah, I'm really, really interested in this part because this is right up my alley, the ayahuasca experience. And I'd love you to tell us what your thoughts on that are and what you think of these beings, because we've heard people on here before say that they've actually spoke to certain beings, and other people go and they see the same beings, and that's something to me. There's something there. What is your take from this? You've done it 70 times. I mean, that's amazing. You have it down. What do you think of this experience?
I had my first near-death experience when I was 20. Well, when I was 19, the eve of my 19th birthday, I had a near-death experience. And in that experience, I went over to the other side. I was fully conscious, and I completely left my body. I had considered myself dead, and that was the hardest part, was allowing myself to die. And, you know, I saw newspaper articles, and I saw my parents grieving and everything. And then I left, and I went to the other side. And my experience with that just really affirmed what my whole life had been about, because the entire time I was a child, all throughout my childhood, I saw spirits and I was visited by beings. And so for me, I always knew that there was a spirit world, because the spirit world was bleeding into this reality. And I knew that most people didn't have those experiences. And so that was part of the soul sickness that created this bulimic eating disorder that I had, where I was just imploding on myself because the world I lived in didn't recognize the spirit world and the things that I felt were really meaningful, you know? And so when I entered onto the shamanic path, I started at 17 and have continued, you know, until now even. But for the first 10 to 15 years or so, I didn't do anything with plant medicines at all. And then there came a time when I was initiated into the plant medicine journey of the shamans, and it was rainforest shamanism, which, interestingly enough, that was the shamanism that I had studied in the Foundation for Shamanic Studies that I began training in when I was only 18. So I had already been studying rainforest shamanism, and I already had a miraculous healing through these means. So I took it to the other level, which was, you know, this plant medicine that they've been using for tens of thousands of years. And I actually had to shave my hair completely in order to do my ayahuasca ceremony. So I had hair as long as I do right now. And the shaman said, you have to cut your hair. You have to give your hair in order to go to the next level. And so, you know, I was like, oh, wow. You know,
that's tough.
That was tough. But I was in Peru at the time. I was in Ollantaytambo, Peru. And I said, well, awesome. You know, my hair will grow back, but this experience only comes once in a lifetime.
Right.
So I went and I went to a barber and we shaved my head completely. So I'm completely bald. And I go do my first ayahuasca ceremony. And it was with a Shipibo shaman. And it was so hauntingly familiar. Like, my soul was just knew, you know, this world. And basically what happens is this mixture allows the veil between this world and the spirit world to thin. And when you have a sincere intention in your heart, it really, really has to do a lot with your intention. If you have a sincere intention to heal, to just know, to allow the spirits to show you and guide you, then the spirits really come to your aid. And so what happens is then you begin a relationship with these helping spirits, because while there's one creator, that one creator created a myriad of beings. And so there's tons and tons of beings. There's 7.5 billion of us here on this planet Earth. And then there are billions and billions of spirit beings in the spirit world, all different types of families, all different types of spirit beings. And so we can create relationships with them, just like you can create a friend, like with, you know, you guys. I just met you guys. We can be friends. This is similar in the spirit world.
So you weren't afraid at all?
Absolutely not. Well, really? I mean, you're a little bit afraid of... I'm always afraid of the transitional space.
That would be me.
That's the scary part.
That would be me.
You have to let go of control.
And aren't you afraid? See, my fear is that you don't come back. Like, if I think I want to go, so I'm going to choose that, you know, blue pill, and I'll never come back. Isn't there some fear of that?
Well, there's always the fear of dying. I think that basically that's the fear of dying. And dying is the ultimate loss of control, because we do a lot to prevent ourselves from dying. We always are a little bit white knuckling our reality.
Right.
We're trying to control it. We're trying to control people. We're trying to control events. We don't like it to get out of control. And death is the ultimate out of control. So ultimately, what we fear is our death. What happens is, once you have met your death a number of times, you don't fear being out of control so much anymore, because you know that what happens is you put your trust and your faith in a higher being. This is all a big part of it. This is all a big part of these traditions, the shamanic tradition and the mystic traditions, is who are you? Where did you come from? And how do you interface with this world? So when you give your trust over, really, and it's like a baby. You know, you are a child of the divine. When you go into these experiences and you humbly recognize that, you say, I know that I'm a child of divine. You know, do whatever you do, please just do it with love. That's what I say every single time I've taken ayahuasca, which is 70 times. I say to the spirit of ayahuasca, who I respect deeply, do whatever you need to do. Let's just do it in love.
Now, when you say that you like have friends like that, when you go back the 40th time, do you see the same spirit beings and you remember them and you know them? Like you said, you have friends that you just meet. Is it sort of like that sort of a relationship? Like, oh, this is that being again?
There is some of that. So what will happen? Everything has a spirit in the land that we're at. So right now I'm in Colorado. Those trees outside have spirits. And so if I were to do ayahuasca here, I would be able to open up in the spirit world and create a relationship with certain trees. Trees are amazing healers. I have been completely taken apart by a tree before and put back together. So I could create a relationship with a tree spirit here, and certain ones will have a particular magical spirit, and then I'll always know that tree spirit. This is part of how it works, because the shamans in the rainforest, you know, there's tons of all these plants and there's these animals. And this is how they understood the healing power of certain plants, because they would have a relationship with the plant. So this is how you create a relationship with the environment here. Everything has a spirit. It's all been created by the one creator, and we've all been endowed with this. Now, what happens with the spirits in the spirit world is each one of us has a spirit family on the other side. So we all have guides already, that they've already been a part of your life for lifetimes.
Do you call that like the soul group that we often hear on this? Is that what you would call that?
Yeah, I call it your spirit family on the other side. That's what I call it, yes. So they call it soul group. And if you read the work of Dr. Michael Newton, The Journey of Souls, that's one of the best books.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. That was the Martini stuff. Mm-hmm. We think that's Martini. Amazing stuff.
Exactly. And so he confirms, you know, through all of his years of doing regression with people, that we all have a soul group. So that soul group can become known to you. And so for me, what happened was my family, my angelic family, became known to me, and they made themselves present. And they continued to interact with me. And the more I did it, the more they revealed themselves. So I would say the first 30 times were me processing my personal soul, my history, my family genetics, and my family imprints. And so I didn't get into the angelic kingdoms until about like 35, you know.
Wow.
And then the angelic kingdoms opened up, and that was pretty amazing. And so it's all, yeah, it's all just a part of my soul path, and I've chose that. And you know, it's not easy to do 70 ayahuasca journeys.
Right.
It's work. So you do have to meet that with the heart of a sacred warrior, because every single time I go into that, I know that I give up power and control. But I give it up, just as any moment we have to be willing to give up our life, because there will be a moment when we give up our life. We have to remember that. And so it brings you humbly back to that point every time.
Well, we're going to take just a minute break. We've got to hear from our good friend, George Norrie, because he's going to talk about the upcoming Contact in the Desert, where our amazing guest today, Elizabeth Wilcock, is going to be doing a lecture. And when we come back, Elizabeth, I want to ask you, during your 70 times, do you feel a healing, not only spiritual, but also physical? So I wanted to talk about that when we come back. So don't go anywhere. This is Truth Be Told with Tony Sweet and Captain Ron. Don't go anywhere.
Join me, George Norrie, in Indian Wells, California, for the 7th Annual Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, May 31st to June 3rd. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure filled with exciting explorations into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact. This amazing weekend offers over 50 lectures, 40 workshops, 8 exciting panels, special events, and a luncheon that I'm hosting. Contact in the Desert also features leading experts including Giorgio Tsoukalos, David Wilcock, Linda Moulton Howe, Michael Tellinger, Eric Von Daniken, Doc Wallach, and many more important researchers and scientists in the field. Contact in the Desert is your place for inside information. Join us at thecontactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. It's time to make contact. That's contactinthedesert.com. Don't miss it. Contactinthedesert.com.
All right, we're back. This is Tony Sweet, Captain Ron, and we have an amazing guest, and I'm really enjoying this conversation with Elizabeth Wilcock, and she's going to be doing a lecture coming up at Contact, and we're going to talk about that after a minute. But I wanted to finish this conversation up. Elizabeth, when a lot of people, when they do ayahuasca, they do have a lot of spiritual healing, but do you ever feel physically changed?
Well, also, definitely. Yes. One instance in particular, so I was down in the rainforest in Peru, and I had gone all by myself down there to a place that I hadn't known about, and I was going, I just had this feeling I wanted to go deep into the jungle, and I wanted to work with a master shaman who was a traditional master. And so a friend of mine said, well, you know, here's this guy that I know about, Juan Flores was his name, and why don't you go there? So I booked a flight to Pucallpa, and
God bless her.
You take an hour taxi drive to the river, and then from the river you take a boat ride for an hour, and then, you know, you get to the shore, and then you hike in, you know, for another hour. And
wow.
You know, as we're hiking in, I'm thinking, God, what are you doing? You know, here you are.
Too late to turn back now.
I was like in my 30s, you know, just all alone, you know, like hiking into the deep jungle with men, you know. Anyway, so I get there, and we're doing a series of, you know, shamanic journeys. And what happens on one of them is you have to be willing to be taken apart. That's part of the whole thing, is really giving yourself to the wisdom of these spiritual master entities. And I would always just remind myself, I would say, you know, this is what taught the master shamans, you know, so just let it go, you know, whenever I would feel a little nervous. This one particular time, I felt these presences, multiple presences, come to my right-hand side specifically. And I felt the entire right-hand side of my body here, my upper chest and my breast area, being completely taken apart, like pixelated. You know, it felt like they, and I just let them, I said, do whatever you want to do. And they completely took apart this entire side of my body for a while. And then they put it back together. Wow. And that may have lasted 35 minutes or something. Wow. Well, what was interesting is that I had like a benign cyst in my breast, and on that side, that very side. And I've always been aware of it. It's like a benign thing, you know. You know, my mother is a nurse practitioner in women's health, and so, you know, we always made sure, like, you know, she knew what it was. And but after that, it was completely gone.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I knew what they were doing, and I knew that they came to work on that part of me.
Wow.
And so they healed it completely. And I didn't ask for it, actually. I didn't really think, because I knew it was benign. It never, so it wasn't a concern of mine. But it's probably a weak area of my body, and they fixed it.
It's kind of like when they say, it's not what God thinks you need, it's what he, or what you want, it's what you need. So
it's interesting. Elizabeth, let me ask you this. So you have all these different beings that you become aware of, and you know, and you see again. How do you differentiate this spirit world from, like, when you were talking earlier about the ET presence on Earth? So is the extraterrestrial presence completely separate from the spirit world?
Well, some of the what we call ETs are a part of the spirit world. And so there are third density beings, like you and I, we're in third density right now. There are fourth density beings that are of a more refined energetic nature, but they can kind of be both. If they want to be seen in third density, they can. If they want to just stay in fourth density, they can. And so sometimes when we're experiencing ETs, we're experiencing other families of beings that are simply in that this next dimension over, that's a little easier for us to perceive, which would be the fourth density, is really the way, you know, my husband talks about it, David, because he's really into the law of one, and they talk about densities.
Right. You know what's really interesting about you bringing this up right now? I just want to say something here that, you know, as we've talked about on the show, the ET UFO abduction thing has really moved in the last few years from a nuts and bolts from another planet coming here to an interdimensional spiritual experience, that the ETs are from another thing. And like you said, David talks about the densities of that. Yeah. That is seems to be how this whole discussion is moving, that it's much more of an interdimensional phenomenon.
It makes more sense.
Than
as people are recognizing the differentiations between densities, you know, as people are recognizing that there is a spirit world and that there are entities in the spirit world. And so everything's not just happening here in third density. My very first ET experience was a fourth density ET experience where I was brought onto a ship, but it was in the fourth density. And so that was my very first experience. My second experience was a third dimensional ET experience where I saw multiple ships all at one time doing maneuvers in the sky and then having a conference on the ground. And so once you realize that there's layers of energy back to the source, you know, source is the creator of it all. And when we talk about the angelic beings and archangels, those are beings of light that are very close to source. And then as you go down in the densities, it's like the light congeals. The light becomes denser and denser in a way. Third density, where we are, there's actually less light, if you will. And the closer you get, like when you go to the angelic kingdoms, it's more light. And so there's gradations. And so when you know who you are, which is a multi-dimensional, eternal, spiritual being, who has a third density meat suit for a short period of time, when you understand that part of who you are, things make more sense. You can put it into perspective.
It's true. Well, let's talk just a few minutes left, and I want to talk about your lecture coming up at Contact in the Desert, because a lot of people won't be able to attend, but the people that will, I want to get them excited. The title of it's ET, The Divine Feminine and Ascension. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about?
I want to tie in the element of the feminine into the extraterrestrial and ascension story. And as I said before, I feel that the bringing back into all of us a respect for the noble feminine energies and actually embodying those noble feminine energies that is important for ascension. And then also I'm going to talk about feminine ET beings in our history. And so I'm going to weave in the feminine ET empowerment basically into the conversation, and talk about some of the other things that come to mind. I'm just going to also allow some channeling stuff because David's going to do it with me.
Oh, great.
I'm excited to have him. So he's going to be there. So it's not just going to be me. So that's also nice to hear. It's so much to get into. I really can't get into it because if I open up any one of those concepts, I'm going to be talking to you guys for hours.
I'll be like, okay, four hours from now.
Well, did you have you said to me yesterday that maybe you'd have something new that you guys have, because Tony and I were talking about the stagnation of.
We always love to hear some new stuff.
Yeah, you got anything new that you could just?
I have something new. I talked to him before we came on the air, and so let's see what I can pull out. So here's something really interesting that some of your listeners might not know right now. The United States Navy just made public a patent for an anti-gravity craft. And
wow.
It's a triangular shaped craft. And so it made the mechanics of it public. So it's like, here's how you make this, right? They made it public in such a way that anybody can make this and you don't have to pay any kind of royalties to the patent holder. And so David has an insider, he's a couple of them that haven't yet fully come out that we're going to roll out soon. So in the next 6 months or so, you're gonna see these people come out. One of them said, that and he's known about this stuff for 30 years. So one of these insiders was, as a child, brought to the underground bases to communicate with the ETs, because the ETs don't like to talk to human adults because we're jaded. You know, we're.
I say it makes sense. I don't even like.
They don't want to deal with it. We're manipulative, we lie energetically, we're not really, but a child, like, it's okay. So anyway, they wanted to talk to him, and they gave him a lot of their information. So he said, he's like, yeah, that's 30-year-old technology, but it's interesting that they filed the patent and that they released it. So what that says to us is that they're getting ready to roll this out. We're pretty sure that, of course, the government has already created one of these craft, because they probably wouldn't put the patent out without having already created it. So what we have to look forward to, there it is right there. Good job, Tony.
You're welcome.
Where did you find that?
Oh,
he's
the man. I have my V's.
He's got his own insiders.
David just released that. He released it in the little video with Corey, but before that, he actually released it at his New Living Expo talk, which he has yet to make public, but it's on its way. So we're dripping out some of the information little by little too. So that's the triangular craft, and it has two holes. It has an outside hole, but it has like 3 inches of space. And then it has an inside hole, and then somehow what it does, it's some sort of protoplasmic, I don't know what, and it creates anti-gravity, so the ship becomes so light, and then it can go very fast. But what we're envisioning is everybody having a hovercraft, a hovercraft vehicle. So this technology exists, and it's been here for a really long time, so it's really exciting that that's been released, but it also has a bit of a dark side to it as well, because it, the way that it was released by the U.S. Navy, in an article where they also, you know, spoke about, well, Tom DeLonge and all that, they're basically weaving in the Tom DeLonge CIA disclosure narrative into that particular Navy public patented release. And so you do have to be aware that the CIA has always infiltrated the UFO community. And all you have to do is watch Mirage Men, which I suggest for all of your listeners to go do. Watch the movie Mirage Men, which is an open confession of an ex-CIA agent and how it was his job to infiltrate the UFO community, which he did in the late 80s, early 90s. I believe Robert Doty, I believe it is. His name, Doty, is his last name. And so he talks about how he did infiltrate the UFO community on behalf of the CIA in order to put disinformation into it. So we all have to know, we have to be sober and understand that this information comes out sometimes as a part of a larger narrative, if you will, or a larger plan. And so it's very important just to be aware of that too. So that's a part of that one.
And with this combination of spirituality, science, and then just your own intuitiveness, do you feel that we will get some sort of disclosure when it comes to actual visitation, where it's mass visitation, where the world will see the truth?
No way.
Yeah, I don't really know about that, honestly. I know that my husband is clearly on the side of wanting what they call full disclosure, which is tell everybody everything.
Right.
We want that too. We definitely want it. I just don't see it either, though.
Well, we used to have it, you know, before they were curating history. If you look at the Dogon tribe in Africa, you know, the Dogon have been, they were visited by the beings from Sirius.
Yep, Starman.
Spaceship and landed and told them about the, you know, told them about the body and told them about astronomy and the, you know, the elliptical orbit of Sirius B, which is this hidden, you know, it's a dark star, and we didn't even know about it until, you know, our modern age. So if you look at any old tradition, they've all been visited by the ETs. Right. So it wasn't until they started really curating history at a certain point in time where they didn't want us to know, because a certain fraction wanted to pretend like they were the most powerful on Earth. And it's really gotten embedded. And honestly, I really don't know how that will all shake down. I would hope so. You know, when I was a young child, I always wondered, like, why is this place so backward and slow? Why don't they already have, you know, hovercraft? And, you know, why aren't we already living in total harmony with nature? Why are we doing all this to it? So from the time I can remember, I wondered why we didn't do it. There's powerful, powerful forces that are, they're dark and they're against all this stuff. And they're everywhere. They're in our community. They're in the government. They're everywhere. And so they have a concerted interest in skewing it and keeping certain things hidden and keeping control of the people. And honestly, I just haven't really personally been that interested in that part of life until I got married to David. I just wasn't. And I'm not that interested. I've had my experiences with ETs. I know they exist.
Right. You have your belief system already, right? It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. And this is all new to me, you know, and honestly, this is one of the most contentious, negative, you know, communities I've ever seen. And so it's a little I'm a little turned off by it.
Yeah, I can't stand that we have that in this community. I don't even know where that comes from or why. We're all rowing the same direction, you know?
But like my dad said, I remember one time when I was a younger and I was talking to my dad about the Bible, and I was like, Dad, do you believe in the Bible? And he said, son, he goes, anytime man has their hands on anything, he goes, you're not going to get the full truth. And so I think this is what happened. Even in our own community, you know, egos and you know, who's the most powerful, who's the most this, who's the most that. And I just think, you know, unfortunately, we have people like Elizabeth who brings the feminine and that has a little more sensitive and more compassion. And I think that's where that's why the feminine are starting to really rise. And I think that's what is needed. So.
Yeah, so I hope to seed into, clearly I've been brought into this community, and I hope to seed into this community some of the gems that I have found inside of my mystic traditions, including the ancient martial art tradition of the sacred warrior and the spiritual mystic traditions of shamanism and the priestess path. And hopefully in that way, you know, we can really come to a place where we're all truly inspired with what we do, and in a noble way, we help to build each other up. We congratulate people on their successes. We share the disclosure, you know, narrative, and really lift this up. That would be my hope for this particular community, as well as just the whole earth and humanity. As daunting as that wish is, we still have to hold on to that dream of living in a world that is a loving, peaceful, harmonious world.
Hear, hear.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate you bringing your wisdom and your experience. You can go to elizabethwilcock.com. And you can check out all her upcoming events and just find out her.
Including Contact in the Desert.
Contact in the Desert next week. What day and time? Do you know the day and time?
Yes, it's Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Both me and my husband will be talking about ETs, the Divine Feminine, and Ascension.
Awesome.
And for the ones that can't make it, we're going to be there. We're going to do some live coverage, and we hope you guys tune in always right here on Truth Be Told. Thank you so much. Everybody, join our chat room. Join our subscription channel on YouTube. Follow us on all iHeart, Spotify, all that good stuff for our podcast. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, Captain Ron, with the amazing Elizabeth Wilcock. We'll see you at Contact.